Hello, everyone, and welcome to Boo Fundraising Horror Stories. We are delighted to have you here today, though there seems to be a little slide glitch. I'm not sure what's causing that. Jay, are you going to share your screen with us as well? Let's see my screen. Hold on there. It is being glitchy. Oh my God, that's great. That's great. Good for you.
I know this looks very much like me usually, but I've grown my this is my Ambassador Bolton look. I've been working on this.
Wonderful. Very good for you. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. We're delighted to have you here. For some reason, the slides aren't showing. So GoToWebinar has been glitchy for the past couple of days, which is very frustrating. And let's see if this helps, because we do want to be able to share our pictures. Oh, and Marcy, we got you. You're on. So does that mean we have are you good? Oh, and now she's off. So hopefully Marcy is going to share. I think she has she's got a costume. But anyway, we're always so serious in this business. And I thought Jay and I thought it was really time for us to. It's almost impossible for me to look at you, Jay, with that on. But we really thought it was time for us to do something fun. We all share with each other these great stories, and we thought it was we thought it was time to share them with everyone because we can be very funny. We just tend to be very serious as fundraisers. I really like that hat. I hope you don't get too warm in it. So we've got a bunch of people with us today. I have no idea why this is so wonky. No idea that why, but let me try one more time on that. I think each time someone pops on, we might be getting a different screen. But we have four of our illustrious peers with us today: Sandy, Sue, Pam, and Marcy. Each of them, they're all going to share stories. We really hope you will as well. Before we want to make sure you know where that questions box is. Kit is asking, where is my costume? You know, I love Halloween, but I've never been big on costumes. I am wearing orange. And I have to say, I think it's part of my being sort of shy and an introvert and not liking to draw attention to myself. So, just the idea that where I'm here on cam today is a lot for me. So I don't have a costume, I have to say, Kit. But I am going to show you some great costumes that we've made for my son over the years, and some other pictures. So hopefully you all have can see a screen. You're seeing our videos. And you're seeing a control panel. If not, click on that orange and white arrow to expand it, because we're going to ask you a couple of questions as we go along. And we really would like you to share some of your stories too. It's not just about us and our stories. We are making a recording of this. We'll send it around to everyone this afternoon so everyone can hear it on Halloween. And we wish you all a happy Halloween. So we're going to start with this question. So I went to the store this morning to get my favorite candy. And it was really, really hard because I love sugar. I'm a real sugar person. And I eat anything as long as it doesn't have nuts in it. And I did end up choosing M&Ms. So I want everyone to type in what their favorite candy, Halloween candy, is. And we'll read those out. And Jay, what is yours?
Fine.
Yes.
I'm trying to stay away from the candy right now, Brian, but it's usually been a Nestle's Crunch Bar or maybe $1,000 bar. Remember we were
Thousand
paying
dollar bars.
you
Yeah,
paying
hundred. What was
maybe
that?
it's
$100,000 bar, right? What were you gonna say?
a $1 million bar now. I don't know. Inflation.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, if you put that $100,000 bar in a donor advised fund at 5%, where would it be today, 10 years later? Especially if we have donors who aren't using the money in their donor advised funds, that could get to be a very big bar.
Like PowerPoint.
So we have, of course, it's funny, we were going to do a poll, but I figured there'd be so many. We are getting a lot of Twix, a lot of Twix, some Reese's, some peanut M&Ms, Reese's peanut butter cups, frozen. Oh, Paul McDonald said frozen Milky Ways. And Jay, remember yesterday I was saying I love frozen Milky Way bars. That's a great one. Reese's pumpkin.
Yeah.
Eileen says $100,000 bars as well. Okay, well, I hope you're all eating your terrible for you sweets. And we've got Hershey's, chocolate in general. That's great. So thank you for sharing all of those. We're giving prizes out today. None of us can win them. So I hope you all are going to have some stories that you'll share and that you'll actually come on with your audio. Wildest story, funniest story, most inappropriate situation, and best excuse for not meeting. So Marcy is going to give out a book, Empowering Effective Development Ambassadors. Sandy's giving out Get Fully Funded. I'm going to give out my Asking Styles book. If anyone else wants to give something out, we'll give out more prizes. We'll send those to you. And the way we're going to figure this out is each time someone tells a story, we're going to ask you to comment on it. And then we'll look back and see who got the most comments and such, and we'll figure out who wins. So while we start our stories, if you could type in whether you will share a story with us, that would be great. I'll be making note of that so that I can swing back to you. So please type in if you're going to share a story. And if you want, you could just type it in the questions box if you don't want to be live with your audio, but it would be great if you shared it live. And now I'm going to ask you, and take your time. Tara says she's thinking about it. We have all the whole hour. Jay, why don't you start with one of yours?
Get in the right.
Wait. Oh my. Do we have, what is Jay doing?
Lots of is that backwards enough? I don't know.
No, we can read it. We can read it.
There are lots of stories that I've collected. None of these are mine. So I
okay.
take credit for the incidents, but these are things that I think are common enough to us that I thought it'd be fun to share a couple of them. And
Okay.
collecting them over time, so some are ancient, like 1980s, 90s, but they again still have relevance today.
Okay.
One right now, and then we can, return to some others later. And I'm going to bring out my bottle of horror stories right now to do this. So
Okay.
this is what I might call howling good time.
But I'm bummed.
All in the words of the people who experienced them. So I'm reading it like a Bible passage because this is their life. In 1985, I fielded a phone call from the president's secretary, who had just finished talking with the wife of a new trustee. The trustee's wife called regarding invitations to events that where they were receiving from the president's office. She expressed an interest in attending events, but had to ask if the university was really serious about extending the invitation to the trustee and to his, quote, spouse, Molly, the family's German shepherd. The entire family wanted to be there for the first black tie event that Molly attended. Was that the director of development had lunch with the new trustee and then informed the research staff that the name of the family's dog was the trustee's spouse. So it was all about how we're sharing data. We had a lot of fun with this Freudian slip in the office. Research staff accepted the information from the director of development without doing any fact checking. When I fielded the call, I was just about finished editing the new trustee directory, which included the names of spouses and one dog named Molly. Imagine the fallout from a horror story of this nature. Fortunately, the family had a great sense of humor. 7 years later, they named a chair in honor of Molly and in memory of the secretary of the board of trustees, who was not at all pleased about the situation back in 1985.
That's
The
really great.
fact, and it may be the only named chair for a dog in the United States.
It might be, but maybe not actually. People are very fond of their pets, so we don't know about that. By the way, let's see. Reed is saying maybe there should be a prize for the most expensive candy purchased. Oh, that's interesting. I'd like to know what that is, Reese, if that's yours. Well, here's one of mine. Here's a story of mine I'm going to share, and then we're going to ask some of our illustrious peers to share some of theirs. So, a number of years ago, I was working for an organization in New York, and I had to reach out to one of the board members. So I called the board member's house. And her husband picked up the phone, and there was a little noise in the background. I really wasn't sure. He was chatting with me, I was chatting with him, And then I asked him, I said, okay, may I now, I'd love to speak to Bonnie now. I need to, you know, do some, you know, work with her. And he said to me, well, I can't get her because I'm in the shower. And he was literally standing in the shower, obviously naked. He was in the, and it turned out it was the water. He was standing in the shower. It was such a gross thought. And it was so, I was so mortified. It's like, what do you say at that point? I thought, why did you pick up the phone? Why are you talking to me? You're in the shower. So that's one of mine. And now, Marcy, you are on. Oh. So how about if you share one? Because I see your sound is on.
Am I on? You can hear me?
We can hear you, Marcy. Go for
awesome.
It.
Awesome. I'm just wondering if I hit the same button, if you can see me. I just have my little hat that I went and found. Oh.
Here, I think it's coming. Let's see.
Oh, is it?
No.
We'll
tell your story, and we'll see.
All right, I'll tell my story. You know, okay. It worked before. That is just, don't you just love technology, fellas? Well, hello, everybody, and happy Halloween to you all. I don't know. I have three favorite stories I got ready for this, and I'm not sure which one to start with, but I guess I'll start. It's always fun to talk about the leadership, isn't it?
Yes.
So here is, I worked for 23 years at the University of Wisconsin Foundation, and I had a reputation when I left for having the longest memorandums of agreement of any other fundraiser. Now, you might wonder, why was that? I mean, that's a legitimate question. Why was that, right? Why did that happen? So it happened because I had, in my time there, I had the opportunity to work with five different deans, and they were wonderful. But then there was this one dean, and we won't talk about names, right? And he asked to see all of the memorandums of agreement. And I thought, well, now that's odd. But I thought, okay, he wants to get to know these donors. But, you know, then I said, so you want the living donors. Now, I've kind of lost you at all. Can you still hear me?
We can hear you.
Golly, this thing is wonky. There we go. Maybe he wanted the living donors, right? So he could kind of hear their stories from their letters of agreement when he met them. Right? I thought that was wonderful. And he said, no. Actually, he'd rather have the dead ones. And I thought, now that's odd. So I gave him the memorandums of agreement. He read these agreements page to page, and wherever he could possibly find a hole or a loophole that might give him access to the money, guess what? He said, you know, this agreement doesn't really say that it can only go to this or that. So I could use it to book my private jet to go here or there, or I could use it to do blah, blah, blah. And none of his ideas for the money were what I would attach the word noble to. So I would, and he managed to spend down a $400,000 reserve in about 4.5 months. So that is that is the kind of thing that as you're in that job wakes you up at night in pure horror. And what I did with that is I said, by gosh, never again will anybody misuse donor money because my endowment memorandums of agreement aren't ironclad clear. So it's a horror story with a lesson, my friends. No one's going to get into my donor money.
That's great, Marcy. And I really like the sound effects.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good for you. Sandy, do you want to unmute yourself and share a story with us? There you go.
Yeah, sure thing. As I was thinking through these, some of them are scary. Some of them are kind of dumb. I had probably a similar situation, but on a much lower scale. I worked at a rescue mission once, and we had this club in town that raised money to buy a commercial washer and dryer. When you're doing a lot of laundry, the commercial style of washer and dryer is really important. And they, it was a huge deal. And I remember the day that we, that those things were delivered and we put them in use and we made a big deal out of it. And everybody's all happy except for our COO. And at the end, I said to him, what's going on? You know, like, what's the matter with you? And he goes, we should be able to spend that money however we want to. They should just give it to us and then we can use it for what? I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding. Like, we needed the appliances and this brought those donors great joy to do this. And he was just so short-sighted. So he probably was related to Marcy's Dean, I'm sure.
I bet. Do you want to tell one more while we have you on?
Sure. One of the ones that always makes me chuckle, I spent 5 years at the food bank in Knoxville. It was five of the most fun years ever. We used to do a lot of big food drives. And with the University of Tennessee being right in our backyard, we did a lot of food drives with them. And this 1 year, we did a drive with the Lady Balls. If you follow college basketball, you guys all probably heard of the Lady Balls. That's back when Pat Summitt was there and head coach and everything was great. They were winning the championship just about every year. So the food drive, the deal was you bring three cans of food and you get a ticket to the next game, which I think was LSU. Doesn't really matter, but it was for the next game. And they had different ones of us, staff and volunteers. We were manning these giant 55-gallon barrels so that as people came and dropped their canned goods in, we would say thank you to them and hand them their ticket for the next game. So it's pretty simple, right? So I'm working my barrel and most everybody's really excited and they've got their orange on, they're ready for the game, they're going on inside for the game that was that night. And this guy comes up and he holds his hand with this little plastic grocery bag of his cans over the barrel and he looks at me. And I'm like, thank you so much. And I hand him the ticket and he won't take it. He goes, now I can use this for any game I want to, right? And I'm like, no, it's for the LSU game. He goes, what do you mean? And so then he like berates me for a couple of minutes. And finally, I'm really sorry, but it's for the game next week. It was in the newspaper. This was back when people put stuff in the newspaper. It was in the newspaper that way. And he finally just, and he turns around and just walks off, takes his canned goods with him and walks away. And I just remember being so stunned by that and thinking, why would you do that? Why would you come to the game if you're coming to see the Vols and you're bringing the cans? It's three cans of beans for crying out loud. Just drop them in the barrel and go on. And he was so mad. He just turned around and walked away. And oof. I was just scratching my head over that forever going, I don't get it.
Yeah. And sometimes we just don't. We just can't get it, can we? Here's a funny one that came in. Well, I think it's funny. From Nancy, I'm going to read this one, and then Sue, if you've got one, you can share one, then we'll go back to Jay. So Nancy said, a donor with high capacity needed to be qualified. They thought that she had the high capacity. So I went to her home to meet her. It was a qualifying visit. She had turtles everywhere. In her lawn, she had ornaments. Look at Jay. And that should have been an indicator. In the house and everywhere, there were turtles, including turtles in tanks and in the sink. Needless to say, she was not a high-capacity person, but a sweet lady. Actually, maybe she was high-capacity. You know, some of these very odd ducks. Some people live real miserly, but I can't imagine if I went in and there were and there were these turtles in the sink and everything. That's a good one, Nancy. If anyone wants to type in what they thought of that one, that would be great. You can type in boo, laughing out loud, anything like that. Sue, do you have one? All right, let's see. Sue, yes.
So can you hear me? I just unmuted.
We can. Yep.
Okay. Hopefully you won't hear the construction that's going on in my driveway and you won't hear my dog who's under my feet. So much like Jay, I collect stories that are not mine to tell. So this one was shared to me by a colleague, and it is, like one of the other presenters, a story couched in a lesson. So relatively new development director went on a ask, a major gift ask. Gentleman had relative, first of all, he was a savvy donor, and he gave fairly frequently in about the $5,000 range. Mm-hmm. The development director had a lovely conversation with this man. Never once did he ask for the money. So at the end of the conversation, the donor gave him a $5,000 check. Said, here's the check that I normally give you. He reached into his jacket pocket, his inside jacket pocket, and he pulled out another check and he turned it and showed it to the development director. It was made out for $15,000 and he ripped it in two and he said, this is the check I would have given you if you'd made the ask.
Ooh.
So,
ouch.
That is a very painful, as Jay's Ooh, falling off the right. screen. That's a very
Sue wins.
That's a very
you win.
That's a very yeah. painful
oh,
lesson
painful.
In
oh,
all the things that we tell our clients mm. to do as Ooh. As nonprofit whisperers, so to speak. Mm. So that's the story. That's what I've got.
Oh, that's a good one. Painful, painful, painful. Yes.
Painful.
Yes. So, Jay, are you still in your Star Wars mode or have you? What are we now?
I'm coming.
You're coming. Well, while you're doing that, let me share because I was looking for pictures on the internet. When I came across this one, I thought of times when we might want to muzzle either our donors or our fellow askers because of the things they're saying, or when we're with someone on an ask and they just won't be quiet and we think, how are we going to get them to stop talking so we can hear the donor? And when I saw this Hannibal Lecter, I thought of that. So Jay, what do you have?
Yes, for us? Brian Saber. So first of all,
thank you. My namesake.
Yes. So this one is Life on the Farm.
Okay.
And this is, again, another story from an office where they were having some issues with recognizing donors properly. My boss approached me one day to tell me of our governors having read a research report in which we had written about a prospect's sexual activities. Dumbfounded, I said there was no way we'd ever write something like that. They immediately went to the research files to see what was written, and on the report, which was about a retired couple, they had written, enjoyed loving on their farm. Enjoyed living. For proofreading. And I have one more little one like that, if I may.
Sure.
Kind of theme. This is called You, Your Wife, and Your Other Wife. A place I used to work was set to deliver a named endowment proposal to a major donor. The major gifts officer gave the information to the staff to prepare the document and a mock plaque. Unfortunately, neither the major gift officer nor the staff double-checked the names. They were going off the major gift officer's personal address file, and the information, of course, was old. The proposal had the major donor's former wife's name, and they had just had a messy divorce. The good news is, the proposal was delivered in person, not to the former wife's house. And the major donor calmly pointed out the error and agreed to the endowment, as long as there was a name change to the current wife, of course. Then the gift basket was delivered. It was sent to thank them for agreeing to the gift, and it had the former wife's name on it.
Oh, my. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot.
Oof. Oh.
Did someone lose a job over that one?
No. In fact, none of these stories did they ever lose a job. There was only one where I think somebody was removed from the position. It was not a development person, but that's mm-hmm. a really scary story. So I don't know if you want to hear yeah. that now or later.
Hold on to that one. Pam, did you have a story you wanted to share?
Well, hey, Brian.
Hello, Pam Groh.
How are you? I don't know if you got my message, but I forgot to get back to you on a gift. So we are we have a brand new class called Strategic Planning Simplified, Basics and More. And so I'm offering a free enrollment. It's a $97 value.
Ooh. Wow. Thank you.
And wow. I totally hear you on the costumes. Brian and I are both shy fundraisers, introverted fundraisers. So I don't typically dress up the last couple of times I dressed in costume. One time I went as Peg Bundy from Married with Children.
I want to see that. Yes, I'd like to see that.
That worked out well. And Marilyn Monroe.
Okay. Well, you went for curvaceous ladies I see, whatever that means.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know if you knew this, Brian, but I worked at a grant making foundation for 7 years.
Yes.
This is not quite a horror story, but it's kind of telling about our sector. So I worked at this foundation for about 7 years, and I'll never forget. One day, I'd been there for about 4 years when the vice president of programming, she came to me with this beautiful thank you letter that they'd received. Just beautiful. For a grant proposal that we had declined.
Oh.
And it was the first time we had ever been thanked. I remember the letter said, thank you for your thoughtful review and for your comments. And it was the first time we had ever been thanked, and we did have a pretty extensive review process. And it made such an impact on me that I started out in grant writing, and I always made sure to thank regardless.
That's a good point. Good. Thank you for sharing that.
And then I have one other little one.
Okay.
So early on in my fundraising career, I worked for this really fabulous educational organization working with low-income middle school kids, kind of like a Teach for America model. And well, part of the horror story was I was the fifth development director in 3 years. But the other part was that I was constantly being urged by the ED to weed out their donor database. To remove people from the donor database, to keep it under 500 names to maintain the free status. They were using a system, as long as you had less than 500 names, it was free. Ironically, I'd actually been hired to grow individual giving because they had a reliance on grant funds.
That's really funny. That isn't going to get them anywhere, is it?
No, but it's kind of typical.
Yes, that's funny. Sandy, are you still with us? I think you had one more story, and I know you had a sharp deadline for getting off. Or if you're there, are you there, Sandy? There you are. Did you have one more story for us? I'd love to hear it.
I know I did, and it has fallen out of my head. I think Pam's stories and some of these others are so shocking that it's caused everything to fall right out of my head.
Oh, it fell out of your head. Okay. Well, if you think of it, let us know. I'm going to share one, and then I'm going to read one from Pat that came through. So when I worked for Brandeis, my alma mater, I worked out of the Midwest, and I often brought donors to the campus in the Boston area. And oftentimes they were older ladies. And this one time, I was escorting this woman who had very major capacity, had already made significant gifts. And I was literally to spend all this time with her on the plane, getting her everywhere, making sure she was escorted. And she had a tendency to drink a little too much. So we were at this, we were at dinner at the president's house, and it went well, but she was tipping them back. And then I had to get her back to the hotel. So I went back to the hotel with her, and she was being a little flirty, you might say. And she was 70, and at the time, maybe I was 30. I'm not even sure. So I go up to the door of her hotel, and then she asks if I can come in to turn on a light. She's scared to go in. Then she asked me for something else. She asked me to set her alarm clock, which meant if she was in a suite that I had to go from the living room into the bedroom. And it was at that point that I realized I might be in trouble here. It was the most awkward. It was the most awkward situation. And for me to get out of her bedroom and not without her being insulted and with her being a little drunk, but I was like, what else was I going to do? And I ran out of there. And of course she never said anything because I think she was probably embarrassed as well, but I was cornered in her bedroom, and it was mortifying. So I have never forgotten that one. Anyway, I'm going to share one now from Pat. Let me put on my reading glasses. I knocked on a door and introduced myself to the homeowner. He stopped me short and said, "Where were you born?" I told him the state I was born in, which is not the state we were in. He could tell from my accent. I quickly said, "But my husband was born here." He started to slam the door in my face while he said, "Send him next time." Ooh, that is terrible. Oof. And here's one, no name here. Learning that someone from the advancement office had been sending donors to a competitor because they thought they might want to donate to them instead of us. They no longer work for us. They no longer work for us. Ouch. Ouch. Thank you for sharing that. And here's one more. Back when I was a volunteer helping to run an auction, the day of the auction, a very high capacity donor came and wanted to donate a lovely item. As you all know, the hours right up to the auctions can be a little dicey. Well, the chair of the auction just went off on this donor about the lateness of the gift and the audacity to think we would accept such a last minute gift. It was awful. Needless to say, it took years to repair the damage to the donor and the collateral damage to that circle of donors, ouch, that the person hung around with. The lesson I learned was to, one, breathe when everything seems to be going to hell in a handbasket, and two, always graciously accept the gifts that people give when they offer them, as you never know what is going on in the donor's life and what impact they can have in the future, not only from their giving capacity, but from their influence. Oh, oof.
Wow.
Ouch, ouch, ouch,
ooh,
ouch.
Ooh.
Yeah,
can
donors.
Can I do something, Brian?
Yeah, do so, Pam.
Because it just reminded me, I taught this class last night for beginners, and there was a gal in the class who just started her nonprofit organization, and she said she'd been getting a lot really discouraged. And she came to class last night and she said, "You know, I was thinking that I was going to be learning a lot of these complex things, hearing about a lot of complex things that I wasn't going to be able to handle. And from you, I've learned that good fundraising is really a lot about manners. And I've got that."
Oh, that's nice.
And it's true.
That's good. I like that.
Wow. You got to read Kara's.
I'm sorry?
Kara's got a good one.
Oh, yes, I know. It was very good. Let me see. Well, Jay, how about another one from you?
Oh, all right. Well, this is along the lines of what you just talked about a few minutes ago with your visit, your alarming visit with a donor.
Okay.
So this is a person who says that they were a major gift officer, and a former colleague was working for a charity in Massachusetts and had an appointment with his campaign chair for a one-on-one meeting for planning for the campaign. She told him that she might be outside. So the major gift officer arrived, knocked on the front door, but there was no answer. So he went around the back of the house as previously directed and found her sitting on a chaise lounge by the pool. He sat down in the chair beside her, as she indicated he should do, and they began their chat, and they went through the whole meeting. And everything seemed fine, but of course, yes, he was stark naked during the entire meeting. This is the development officer's words, not mine. The campaign chair was very attractive, and Bob worked very hard to keep his eyes fixed on her eyes during the entire meeting.
Can you imagine that? Who would think that's appropriate, or I guess doesn't care? I don't know what. That is wild. That is truly wild. I've got a few more I'm going to share. First, I want to share with you, Halloween is really big in my house. I'm not big on dressing up, but we've had Halloween parties forever with my son's whole class and lots of decorations. I think some of it may come from the fact that my parents were actually married on Halloween. I don't understand why to this day, right? Because it's just a lifelong joke, right? But I want to share with you, I usually don't share personal stuff, but this is my son. So on the left, that's my son at a pumpkin patch a few years ago. in the middle, one of our homemade costumes. He's a spray can. This one had terrible, this was really poorly designed. He could not walk in it. It is a solid tube. And I had to be his handler the whole time we went trick-or-treating because he could barely move in it. He was walking as if his feet were bound like this. And actually, when we were trying on the costume once, he fell flat over in the apartment because he couldn't balance himself. And then on the right, an amazing costume with him as the Joker from Batman. And one year I picked him up at school. I showed up in the little circle, and this was sitting in the seat next to where he got in. And we drove around with this in our back seat for all of October. And I would say that this is the child I underfed. Here's the one I fed. Here's the one I didn't feed. Anyway, a little sick, but that's our Halloween. So I'm going to share a story from Desi. I worked with a volunteer group that held fundraising events for a local NPO. At the third annual event, all three event chairs got drunk. They ended up roasting the chief of police, who happened to be the big winner of the various raffle items. I think alcohol has caused a lot of our stories over time. Lisa says, I had a board member that got so drunk. Here's another one. At a gala we were hosting that I had to basically carry him to his ride. And here's one. This happened to a friend of mine who is sophisticated and has volunteered for many large nonprofits. Her daughter was at a college in the Northeast. The development office gave my friend names of other parents to call for gifts. One father said to her, don't you know I'm the parent who's suing the school? My son has been suspended because he was president of the fraternity that got in trouble. I'm not giving any money to the school. My friend then called the development office to ask why she had been told to call that guy. The development officer's response was that the suit was a private matter, and so they didn't want to remove the parents from the list. Really bizarre. Of course, the lawsuit was public. My friend stopped making calls for her son's college, I would say. That's terrible. I think we've all probably had, and of course, chime in if you think this is a winner. I think we've all had those situations where we call people and we're wondering, why did someone tell us to call this person? Right? Really put in a bad place. Let's see. We have so many of them coming in, which is great. Wait here. I passed one here. So Becky, at a site visit, a donor didn't think students needed a snack play break from the school day before they started the program, right? So we were seeking funding for. So obviously didn't understand at all how kids work, that kids need snacks and breaks. It was a total disconnect between the program and the donor. And sometimes we get that, right? Our donors ask us questions and we wonder why we're even with them. Jay, do you have another one? And you are drinking.
It's not alcohol. This is iced tea.
Not alcohol. Okay. I thought maybe it went with the hat.
Sure. This is, I'm going to say the horrifying story. This is one that you might call remembering the really important donors. So for those of you who've worked in annual funds, you may have tried different incentives to keep the team calling, especially volunteer callers. Yes. You're not working with a firm. So this is a nightmare phone-a-thon story. The freshman caller who has a donor on the phone and is working on renewing his gift, working through the conversation. And then the donor says, hey, I hear a lot of noise and bells in the background. Is that all the other students calling alumni like me? Because every time that they made a call, of course, and they got a gift, they rang a bell. It was sort of like running on songs. So there's the first problem. Anyway. And the student says, well, yes, sir, we've got a lot of callers here and we're ringing a bell every time we get a pledge. And then, not sensing that he ought to leave well enough alone, the student caller continued, but you should have been on the phone last week The donor says, well, why is that? And the caller continued, oh, it was a lot noisier last week because that's when we were calling really all of our really important donors.
Ouch. Ouch. Thank you for sharing that, I think. So we wanted to hear the best excuse you've ever gotten for someone not meeting with you. So if you could all type those in, we're going to read them out. And while you're doing that, I'm going to share two of the best excuses ever. One is from 25 years back, and one I just heard a few days ago. So way back when I worked for Brandeis and I was in Chicago, one of our donors was Buddy Mayer. Some of you may have known her. She actually just passed away a month ago at the age of 97 or 99. And she was a fantastic donor to lots of organizations locally and around the country, and a massive art collector. So the president of the university was coming to visit, and I was trying to set up meetings with our key donors in the Chicago area. And when I called Buddy to set it up, she said she couldn't meet because she was hanging her art. And I thought, wow, that's one I have not heard before. I really like that. She was hanging her art. And in fact, she had this world-class art collection. It wasn't like that you and me, where we get a hammer and a nail and we put, you know, when we hammer something and we put our little painting on the wall. These were literally masters. I mean, multi-million dollar arts, piece of art. So I thought that was really cool. There was no way for me to come back from that one, except to say, I hope that we can see it when it's installed. And in fact, she did have us, and it was incredible because literally she had a Renoir, I think it was, in the bathroom. This was on a scale, you know, you just can't even imagine. The other day I heard a brilliant one. I was talking to a peer of mine who's helping her, independent school, with a reunion. So she's calling all her fellow alumni, and one of them said that she can't really deal with the solicitation now because she's bottling her wine. She has a vineyard, and I guess it's bottling season, and she doesn't have time to think about anything else. I thought, okay, that is a great one. I have never heard that one. Bottling my wine. So let's see what people might be typing in. Let's see. Is anyone typing in best excuse for not meeting? Let's see. Well, Kit's saying a donor told me that if I insisted on meeting in person, that he would not make a gift. We've definitely heard that. Let's see. I don't see any good. I'm not sure I'm seeing some good excuses coming in here. Jay, do you have some?
I don't. And in fact, in my case, I guess the difficulty has been getting the fundraisers sometimes to call for the meeting, and their excuse more than it is the excuse of the donors.
Exactly. True. Well, we'll see if those come in, but I have a good one from Natalie I want to share. At the not about excuses, but a story. At the annual summer gala, during the dinner and while guests were enjoying light music and the beauty of the evening, a guest stole the microphone from the band and began conducting his own intoxicated live auction. First, staff and gala committee leaders were stunned and thought it was a joke. After about a minute, we clearly realized this was no joke. He was auditioning off his Cleveland Brown suite, which was really worthless then, as it is now. He was wrestled off the stage to the horror of his wife, the gala committee chair, and the guests. The band picked up again, but the event really lost its mood after that. Ah. So another story that has to do with alcohol. It's fascinating how they come through. Let's see. Deborah said, what is spooking me now days is my endless messages I send to this potential donor who said she can help but doesn't respond to my messages. I just don't know what to do anymore. There is not even excuse what to do. Yeah, so that does spook us, right? And we have this fear that we're intruding by constantly reaching out to our donors. I was just doing a webinar on that yesterday, actually, Deborah. And it can create sort of our own horror story where we think we're in this catch-22. Actually, it sort of reminds me of The Shining in a way, actually. So here's a question. And actually, Jay got this right away. I didn't know who – this is someone in Halloween costume. And I'm wondering if you guys on the line know who this is. And while you're doing that, I got an excuse from – I don't know what it is. I think I have bad facial recognition qualities because Kit, Desi, and Ben, and all sorts of people are saying George Clooney. For the life of me, I had no idea, but it is George Clooney. And a lot of you are saying that. So, see, and I put it in here thinking, oh, this will be intriguing. So let's see. Natalie says, from my colleague Karen, Karen was required to shake hands with the donor's parrot. But Karen's male co-worker was not permitted to shake hands with the parrot because the parrot didn't like men. Oh my God, that might be my favorite story today, Natalie. That is brilliant. My parrot, that is brilliant. Wendy, excuse for not meeting. It doesn't work for me to meet at the time because I'm taking care of all the animals. She had ferrets and birds, and she couldn't meet. You know, when you get these excuses, you think, well, how am I going to respond to that, right? What else am I going to say? Emily is saying a parrot is the winner, and Eileen is saying wealthy people can be eccentric. You know, it's funny that you say that, Eileen, because I have met with donors over the years. Tell me, guys, if you have... And I've said with some very wealthy people, and I've walked out and I said, you know, thank God that person is wealthy because he would be on the street. Otherwise, there's no way this person could hold down a job, make sense, go to work every day. He's lucky he inherited money because they, you know, wealthy people can be quirky just like everyone else. And I have to say that sometimes wealthy people, they have, because they have this safety net and a certain contained environment, they get to be in that wacky mode longer. And so we do meet some wacky people. That is for sure.
Like the Knight Rider. In this image, you know, they seem like, right. Then at night, they take on that secret identity where they make all that money and are so successful. That's the trick, is to find out who they are.
Exactly. So let's say I there are so many things coming through. I might be strolling through them. I'll share one more funny story from my past. When I was early in my career, when I was still very, I was taken with the wealth of donors. I think, you know, once you're in this business a while, you get a little inured to it. But I still thought there was some glamorous quality. So there was a donor in Detroit. I was flying to Detroit to see some people, and this donor was going to take me to his country club for dinner. And I didn't grow up with country clubs. So for me, country clubs were something special. So I got there and the man was very elderly. He was on oxygen and he had an aide. Okay. And I thought, okay, I guess he and the aide and I were all going to get in the car and we're going to go to the country club. And he said, well, you know, I'm really not feeling so great tonight. So why don't we just eat in? I thought, okay. So he dismissed the aide. It was just the two of us. And he went to the kitchen, which was this little efficiency kitchen. He didn't have a big glamorous apartment. I sat down there at this little table and he opened his freezer. He took out two lean cuisines and he asked me whether I wanted the chicken or the vegetarian. And he nuked our dinners, put them down on the table. He had some juice or something. And that was my glamorous night at the country club. I had a lean cuisine. We talked a little bit in his kitchen and I left. And I thought after that, I really need to stop being impressed by all these things and getting caught up in them. And he was a lovely man and very delightful man. But it just struck me that I had gone from the country club to lean cuisine in the span of 10 minutes.
Brian, so, you may remember, Brian, I think it was Jerry Panis that told the story about somebody who maybe many of the people on this call know, which is W. Clement Stone, who was this very wealthy Chicago insurance magnate who had a rags to riches story, truly in the you know, the tradition of Napoleon Hill, and that visiting him in his office, and he was on, I don't know, some upper floor of his office building in Chicago, but didn't want to run the air conditioning because he didn't want to spend the money on that. All the windows are open, the fans are running, and he's sitting there behind his desk in his boxer shorts because it's so darn hot, he doesn't want to get too hot. So this is the same kind of thing as the lean cuisine, the person who doesn't want to, this is a grand tradition of people who have a lot of money by not spending a lot of money, right?
This is true too. Eileen asked whether the lean cuisine guy made a gift. It turns out, and you know, this is another thing, sometimes you don't know people's capacity until you really get to them and you talk to them. And it turned out he didn't have, even though he was a mover and shaker in Detroit, it was really based on reputation and all the things he had done in the city and not based on his capacity. He did leave an interesting book collection to the university, which was great. And he connected us to other people. But if I remember correctly, it wasn't much of a gift. Oh, my. I have one mortifying story I have to end with. I was having lunch with an elderly donor in Chicago. This goes back 25 years as well. And an older white woman, which is important to this mortifying story. And our waiter came over and she asked our waiter if he was Michael Jackson. Because,
oh boy,
yes. And I just about died. And she was a lovely lady. And I don't think she meant an awful lot by it. She was a little batty, but I didn't know where to go. That was really probably the most mortifying story in my life, to sit there and smile and hope the waiter understood that she was an older lady and maybe a little batty and not to be, incredibly insulted by her. So, yeah, that was probably the biggest doozy for me. But, over a career, you end up with a lot of them. Gary Bukowski has one. Gary, it's great to have you on today. Had an opportunity to meet a very wealthy donor in Miami Beach. When we got there, he said, let's have some tomato soup. As we sat at the board-sized table looking over the Atlantic Ocean from the 20th floor, he offered Gary tomato soup. You never know, right? You think you're going to get some lovely meal and it's going to be something glamorous and it just isn't. Anyone have a last one more story? Marcy, do you have one? I really haven't heard from you. Share one with us.
All right. I'm going to try this one more time. There
you go. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, this is a real live, true, couldn't make it up story. So we've practiced, we've rehearsed for a major donor visit, myself and a board member / volunteer. And we've practiced the ask, we've written the ask. I mean, it's really important that you know that. Using my 3-sentence ask, we have been through it, we've got this down. He's said it to me several times. We actually get in the call. We get to that moment, I kind of give him the nod, and he says, so Joe, we know you got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Your career as CEO of your company is thanks to some help you received from one of our other board members. And he thinks you should give a gift right now. He's giving $50,000 and thinks you should too. We need your money because, man, our budgets have increased and we've lost some grants and we have some budget cuts. So how about some help? And you get a whopping tax deduction. And I realized that this was an amazing gift to me because it must be everything we should never say in one ask.
Really? A whole less? How painful. That's funny. We have, this is odd from John. So John says that they had a development officer at the university who had the nerve to put a sign on his office door that said, my kids and my money go to XXX, a different university. I'm assuming that person did not last long as a development officer. Wow, that is something. Boy, there was a lot of anger there, I guess. Rebecca asked Marcy whether you got that gift after all that.
Well,
did you?
The story ends with the donor looking at me. And of course, our job is to be, I think we as development officers are the lubricant in these conversations. Mm-hmm. So I looked at the donor and I said, well, perhaps we need to wrap up today and get together again next week. And so we got out of the meeting as soon as we could. The board member said, so, huh? You know, I really did it. And I said, well, actually, that wasn't as we planned. And next time, let's try to stick with the plan. Then I met by myself with the donors, mm-hmm. and we did indeed get the gift. So it all okay. is a happy ending.
Okay, very good.
I have one thing that, you know, Brian, I lemonade. Would like to share that. I don't know if yes. any other women have this ever that they've experienced looking at you two fellas there. But when I first started my work, I would walk in and donors would say, oh, I thought they were going to send a man. And I'd say, no, you know, you got me, but they're men back at the office. So if you'd rather, I can work it out for you.
Yeah, I've heard so many women in the field say that, trying to deal with the challenge of that sexism. And I obviously didn't face that, but I have faced other things in my career that are quite shocking based on who I am. And it's jaw-dropping sometimes what people will say and how biased they can be. By the way, John let me know that development officer was gone in 2 years. I'm amazed he lasted two more years. I don't know if I would have. I mean, I wouldn't expect my development officer to give his or her money to that school and to the school and send the kids to the school, but I wouldn't expect them to be announcing that as if with a badge of honor. Desi's saying, I get called cute a lot. And someone else said that I am amazingly well preserved for my age. Ooh. That's terrible. Terrible.
Brian.
Yes, Jay, one more.
This is an era where we're really starting to think about privacy in a new way. It's not just how we contain our data on our databases, it's the policies we have. And now there's an onrush of this from Europe, and it's already hit California. There was a big speech, I think, by Tim Cook on this subject just recently. It's going to hit us. And this is an old story, but it's very relevant today. And it's also relevant in the time of talking about how people treat different genders, and especially the movement. It was the start of term, and things were swamped with people registering for classes. A young man came to the window inquiring about a student for whom he had a social security number, saying he needed to deliver an urgent family message. The colleague made a rushed decision, knowing that a social security number was sufficient confirmation of relationship. She confirmed the student was enrolled, but had changed their name and handed them the easiest printout she could get, which was a form that included not only the student's class schedule and new name, but also her home phone number and address. The next day, we read in the paper that the student had been murdered.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Young man be an abusive former boyfriend who had been trying to find her across the country for 6 months. She had changed schools, changed her name, really changed her identity and her location and everything. All her information was ex-directory. But because the policies, something as simple as the policies were not in place at the school, made it much easier for this kind of tragic event to happen. So I wanted to make sure that even though that's a bummer, that we heard about something very real in our field, and that's very easy for us to adjust, just like a lot of the things that we're talking about with ethics and other matters. It's just a matter of putting these policies in place for protection.
It is. And for us to be incredibly conservative about how we act and what we do and what we say. I think most of us actually know that because we're trying to do no harm at the very least, right? And there's very little wiggle room for that in our field anyway. So that's quite a horrific story, that is a horror story. That is a fundraising and life horror story. So we're at the top of the hour, and I know there are some more. I'll see if I can share them in an email. But I want to thank Jay, my partner in crime here today, and I really appreciate all your costumes and Marcy, your hat, and all our peers for joining us and all of you. We hope you have a great Halloween and have enjoyed some of these stories, and we'll figure out who's going to get our prizes, and best of luck with all your fundraising this fall. Take care, everyone. Thanks, Jay. Goodbye, everyone.